Chapter 2. Jaws of the Bear. A lone figure stood upon a broken bridge, empty heart and empty hands. She was shrouded in smoke, smudged in dried blood and caked with ashes. Wild embers spiraled upward toward the lightning's pulse above. Her knights had fallen all around her, and bloodied and torn though they were, Kiara and Cane Divok still stood. Dior edged backward, closer to the flaming barricade, blue eyes wide, ashen hair thick with gore and soot. She looked to the vampires before her, the fate awaiting her, and then over the railing beside her. That dark drop whispering, "Escape, sleep, peace." "I am not that girl," she sighed. Cane Divok had been a cruel and brutish-looking young man before he died, and death had done nothing to soften his edges. Already sharp and thuggish, his face had been rent to the bone by the kiss of Phoebe Ardenser's claws during the battle. It twisted now, furious, bloody, and the headsman lifted his great sword large enough to cleave a full-grown bull spineward. Raising it above his head, he readied to treat Dior like same.
"Hold, cousin," the wolf mother said.
Cain hesitated, glancing over his shoulder.
"Hold,"
he growled, his osway brogue thick and dark.
"I'll split her throatways and lick her leavings off my hands. I've earned a feast from this night's foolishness, by God."
"Aye," Kiara replied, looking Dior over like wolf to lamb. "But nay, this feast."
"Who is this mouse to us?"
Cain demanded.
"We came for vengeance. We came for the lion."
"Aye, but the voice came for her."
Kiara met Dior's eyes stone hard.
"Why?"
The girl remained silent, fists clenched in her mismatched armour.
"Answer,"
the wolf mother demanded. "The whip, they call it, those children of Divok. The strength in their veins made manifest in their words. 'Tis no subtle art, like the push wielded by the Elon. There is no poetry to it, no glamour. It is a hammer blow, a battering ram at the gates of will, sending most folk to their knees. And while Cain was but a pup, incapable of wielding it, Kiara was Medea, her voice reverberating with a century's power, echoing on the stone at Dior's feet.
"I don't know why the Voss want me,"
the Grail spat. Kiara peered over the railing into the gulf where the Princess of Forever had fallen. She was no elder, the wolf mother, but no fool either. Third born of Nikita, cunning enough to have risen to ascendancy in her priori's favour after the slaughter of Crimson Glade, and cruel enough to have remained there ever since. She stepped forward, quick as winter wind despite her size. Dior lifted her silver steel to her skin, but before she could anoint the blade, the wolf mother had her, one gloved hand around her wrist, the other her throat. Dior hissed, Kiara lifting her off the ground effortlessly, dangling her over the yawning drop. Dior struggled, curses choked between her teeth, but her strength was a child's fist against a mountainside.
"Sleep now, little mouse," Kiara said.
The vampire squeezed just enough to cut off the blood flow while sparing the bone. Dior's face purpled as consciousness faded.
She'd fury enough to hawk up a mouthful of saliva, yet not enough breath to spit it, her defiance simply spattering on the wolf mother's vambrace. But as she struggled, one last burst of rage, that bloody spittle trembled, shivering, snaking a few more inches up the leather on Kiara's forearm, before finally freezing still. And limp as a boned fish, the holy grail of Saint Michon slipped into darkness. Kiara was already reaching to the iron manacles at her belt, locking a pair about Dior's wrists, another her ankles.
"If the iron hearts have desire of her," she explained, "the Count will desire her too. Simple butchery be not the only way to his esteem, cousin. If ye knew that, perhaps ye'd stand higher in his favour."
"Stand in his favour?"
the headsman scoffed softly.
"Ye mean kneel in his boudoir."
Slinging the girl onto her shoulders, Kiara tossed back the golden vial Kane had loaned her, meeting the younger Divok's flint eyes.
"I dinna quite hear you over the wind then, cousin. It sounded like insult to my maker, your own blood uncle, and priori of your line. But surely not. Mind repeating it?"
Kane made no reply, fixing the vial back around his neck with a sullen scowl, and the wolf mother turned to the mortal boy waiting at the bridge moorings. He was a pretty one, Nordish born, cheekbones sharp as knives, and long hair thick and black as ink. He gazed at Kiara with unmasked adulation, flanked by his two big snowhounds.
"Storm is worsening," she called. "Can you lead us back to the others in this?"
"If you will it," he replied. "I'd lead you through the fires of hell and back."
"No poetry tonight, boy. I didn't ask if you would. I asked if you could."
The lad knelt in the snow beside his hounds. They were a fine pair, a shaggy dark grey male and a lighter female, both of that swift Nordish breed known as lancers.
"Matteo and Elena led us here, mistress. They can lead us back."
"Be about it, then, poet, and swift. Time tarries not, e'en for the timeless."
The boy bobbed his head and led his hounds back up the hill. The headsman climbed aboard his thralled Susius, impatient to be gone, but the wolf mother turned back toward Cairnhaim, studying its sword-sharp spires with narrowed eyes. Lifting her mighty warmall off the stone, she ran her fingertips over that roaring bear's head, staring down into the gulf where my brother had fallen. Her eyes were still crimson from the blood she'd drunk, lips peeled back from her grin as she spat into the drop. "Sleep well in hell, lion." And with the fate of every soul under heaven unknowingly slung over her shoulder, Kiara Divok turned and trudged toward her frightened horse.
"How do you know?"
The last Liathi shifted her gaze from the rough-hewn ceiling to the historian across the river. Jean-Francois was sat in his leather armchair, still writing in his tome by the dim chemical light. But his question hung in the air with the echoes of rushing black water.
"Know what, sinner?"
"What La Chance was doing," the Marquis said. "What she was thinking."
The Grail's mind was ever a locked door to the dead.
Selene replied,
"We did not know her thoughts, nor have we claimed to. We have only told you what we observed.
But how? You were clearly not present through this ordeal, Mademoiselle Castilla, and yet you tell the tale as one who saw it, heard it, lived it."
The light of the chemical globe sparkled in jet-black eyes, and though her lips were mercifully hidden behind her silver muzzle, Jean-Francois was sure Selene smiled. Patience, cold blood. The last Liathi shifted her gaze back to the ceiling and continued. It would take the untamed 3 nights to reach their goal, but Dior woke near dawn on the first. Lifting her head in the dark, she found herself bound, gagged, and blindfolded, curled against something warm and shaggy as a muted storm raged all around her. She tried to speak, thrashing briefly before a pair of hands held her still. A gentle voice bid her,
"Hold now, mademoiselle. You'll hurt the dogs."
Her blindfold was loosened, and she discovered she was in a small hunter's cover, little more than a few strips of oiled canvas, providing shelter from the storm. The space would have been cramped with her alone, but she was squeezed in beside that knife-sharp mortal boy and both his dogs. Uncomfortable as it was, the space was warm at least.
"Are you thirsty?"
he asked.
"Mistress said you could drink if you wished it."
Dior was still muffled and manacled, and could do little but nod. The boy untied the leather gag from her mouth, lifted a water skin to her lips. When she'd drunk her fill, Dior caught her breath, tossing hair from her eyes. Her voice was soft, cautious, not all the way frightened.
"Merci, monsieur."
The boy nodded, sipping what smelled like sharp, reeking liquor from a hip flask.
"Where am I?"
Dior asked.
"Warm."
The boy gestured to the shelter around them.
"Safe."
She scoffed, bitter and hard.
"Where are the vampires?"
The boy nodded out into the storm.
"Sleeping."
Dior peered around the shelter again, taking closer note of her surrounds. She'd been stripped of her mismatched armor, clad now in her golden waistcoat and heavy frock coat, the dark grey damask spattered with blood and ash. They'd left her boots on, at least, and her lockpicks were still nestled snugly inside, but her hands were shackled behind her. She strained against her bonds, and one of the dogs licked her face with a big pink tongue. Dior winced at the reek of blood on its breath.
"Elena likes you,"
the boy smiled. Wiping her sticky cheek against her lapel, Dior looked the lad over more careful.
"I know you," she murmured. "I mean to say, I've seen you before."
The boy's smile was darkly handsome, and he obviously knew it.
"We span a jig together. After you waltzed with Capitaine Baptiste, you're a terrible dancer."
Her skin prickled with goosebumps.
"You're from Avelaine?"
"Oui." The boy winced as he sipped from his flask again.
"I was the kennel boy there. My name is Joaquin. Joaquin Marin." "We freed some of your people,"
Dior gasped, trying to sit up straighter.
"A pack of children from a wagon on the river. A girl named Mila, and another named Isla, and you saw Isla a queen?"
The boy's eyes widened, and he pointed to his cheek.
"Two beauty spots here, and we,"
Dior cried,
"just a fortnight back."
Looking closer, Dior saw the boy's hip flask was embossed with the letters J and I.
"You're the beloved Isla spoke of," she breathed. "You're her ever after."
The boy smiled then, dark eyes sparkling.
She called me that. She did. I know where she's headed. I can take you to her."
Dior tried to roll over, proffering her bound wrists.
"Get me out of these damned things. I can—"
"No," the boy replied simply.
"No?"
His smile was gone, his face drawn cold.
"My mistress forbade it." "Your mistress?"
Dior blinked.
You mean that godless leech?
A change came over him then, storm swift, red and sudden fury in his eyes.
Don't speak of her that way, he snapped, raising a finger in warning. She bid me keep you safe, and so I shall, but I'll not hear one crossed word about her, I vow it.
Dior's eyes narrowed, her jaw clenched, for as he'd lifted his finger, Joaquin had revealed a strange scar atop his left hand. It was fresh, scabbed dark against his skin. An odd mark, geometrical, cut into his flesh and rubbed with ash to preserve the design. Gabriel's voice almost seemed to ring in the air then, the words he'd spoken at Avilaine. Some join willingly, out of lust for power or darkness of heart. Others are just fools who think they'll live forever if given the bite. But most are simple captives, offered the choice between becoming a slave or a meal.
That's no scar, she whispered, staring at his hand. It's a brand.
The boy met her eyes, Dior's skin prickling with horror.
You a thrall?
Scorched, they call us.
He smiled, running a thumb across the mark.
They who are chosen to serve. A gift, you see, to show their love for us.
That's not love, Joaquin, Dior hissed. They destroyed your home, killed your friends, murdered Aaron. That fucking bitch is...
The girl got no further. Joaquin pushed her face down into the floor. Gone was his gentle manner, and as Dior howled protest, Joaquin dragged the leather thong back into her mouth with a terrible strength. Dior's breath was hissing as he climbed off her back. Rolling over, she glowered at him, teeth clenched on her bit. But Joaquin's eyes were on the shelter's flap as he reached out to scratch the male hound's chin, absent-minded.
You'll see, he said. She'll be awake soon. You'll see how wonderful she is.
Dior lay still and quiet, heartbeat thumping quick. Joaquin said no more, and over the next few hours she snatched some fitful sleep, moaning as she dreamed. Eventually, she was woken as the boy slipped from the shelter, pulling herself up onto her elbows to peer out after him. Night was new-fallen outside now, and under the sound of the roaring winter's deep winds, a crunching noise could be heard, as of a spade in fresh snow. The thrall was digging his masters from their beds.
Dior was soon dragged out of the cover by a pair of hands, one pale and whole, the other skeletal, wrapped in ropes of new-grown flesh. Hauled up by the lapels, she found herself face to face with the one called Cain, his stare as hard and cold as the earth he'd slept in. His features were still scarred by Phoebe's claws, four rents torn brow to bloodless chin. He looked her over, hunger prowling back and forth behind those cruel flint eyes. Dior shivered, trying to pull away as he drew her closer, cold lips brushing her neck.
Ye smell good enough to eat.
She could say nothing behind her gag, but her eyes still begged him.
I dare you.
Enough, came a growl. Leave her be.
Cain turned to Chiara, saddling the horses with a doting Joaquin.
She smells like... I smell her as well as ye, but the Vos think her a prize, and we've a long ride ahead. If you've a thirst, you can set it on that lackwit Shay at the end of it. She's a right, Cain mumbled. He's thick as pig shite, Chiara scoffed. You wasted good blood thralling that fool. I scorched him for his sword arm, not his wits. He slew a dozen men at Avalane.
And no few women besides. The wolf mother scowled. You'd best put a leash on that dog, cousin. We didn't drag our arses hundreds of miles from Oswey for rape and slaughter. We came to Nordland for food, and a corpse feeds nobody but the worms. I've half a mind to throw that bastard into the wagons to replace the stock he ruined.
Dior still hung in Cain's grip, his arm as unmoving as an iron bar as he replied,
They'll be yet more ruined by this delay. Nightstone took us weeks from our road. If we don't get back home with the cattle soon, they'll be frozen solid.
Kiara scoffed, her smile like razor blades.
I just killed the Black Lion of Lorsan, cousin. The commander of the Crimson Glade, slayer of great Toliev himself, laid low by mine own hand. That's worth a few dead cows and nae bloody mistake.
We saw him fall,
the headsman pointed out.
Not die. I wager the Contessa would be none too pleased to learn our arrival was delayed by a maybe, cousin. Nor that ye lost your vial scrapping with the lion on the mare and had to beg me mine to replace it.
The wolf mother stopped working, turned to regard the younger vampire. Boots crunching in the snow, she strode up to the headsman, tall enough to meet him eye to eye.
"'Twould be a shame," she nodded, "if someone were to tell her that."
The pair stared at each other, the grail dangling between them like a shank of meat between two snarling bears. The vampires were still as statues, eyes locked, bristling with monstrous threat. But after a breathless age, the younger Kith averted his stare.
"Aye," he murmured, "a shame."
The wolf mother smiled a mouthful of knives, the headsman turning away. Dior could say nothing, teeth clenched tight on her bit, hands in fists. She was slung onto Kiara's pony, wretched and cramping as the vampires rode into the howling night. The weather was cold enough to freeze her blood, eyes closed tight as they trekked down the mountain, farther and farther from the site of Gabriel's fall. But if she mourned her brother, Dior did it quietly. It was near dawn. 3 nights after Gabriel had plunged off the bridge at Cairnhaim, when the smell of wood smoke kissed the air. The male lancer, Matteo, barked, and a shout rang in answer in the dark. Dior lifted her head, peering through her mop of frozen hair as figures emerged in the gloom. Men in mail, long blades at their waists, bearded and burly. Behind them, she saw the silhouette of a hunter's hut, encrusted with shade spine. The men sank to their knees when they laid eyes on the wolf mother and the headsman, a tall, blue-eyed devil at their head. He'd ruddy red hair and a thick beard, dried gore beneath his fingernails, and the roaring bear of the blood Divok stitched on his battle-stained tabard.
"Master Cain,"
he said, dipping his head.
"My lady Kiara." "She,"
the headsman replied.
"What news?"
"Retract those bairns down just as you commanded, master."
The man kept his eyes lowered, though he stole one ice-blue glance at Dior.
"Caught them on the west road. Lars and Quinn have already taken them south to meet Lady Soraya."
"Splendid,"
Kiara replied, before Cain could answer, climbing from her saddle.
"Tally, see to the horses. Jean, get the boy and this one fed."
Lifting a spade from her saddle, she tossed it into the snow beside the red-headed man.
"You may have the honour of digging our beds, she. We set out at first dark, but Lord Cain needs his beauty sleep first."
"Aye, lady,"
the red-haired man replied, not daring to look up. The headsman rubbed at the scars on his face as Kiara trudged toward the hut. Her boots scuffed as she came to a thoughtful halt.
Oh, and she?
M'lady. Nae unpleasantness is to befall this girl while Lord Cain and I slumber. You don't touch her. You don't speak to her. You don't even look at her. You can.
Perfectly, m'lady.
Splendid. Dig quick. The headsman's nae pretty as once he was.
Three of the men chuckled at the jest, but the redhead simply scowled. Young Joaquin lifted Dio from the saddle easy as he'd heft a goose-down pillow, and she was hauled inside the hut. A thatchwood hovel with walls of daub, now overrun with fungus. It stank inside, sweat, rot, and feet. But it was warm, at least, a fire burning in a little hearth. Dior was propped in a corner, still bound and gagged, trembling hands bunched in white-knuckled fists. Her captors had given no clue where they were headed, or what her fate would be at Road's End. But surely, it must be a dark one. Joaquin stood near the fire, his hounds stretched out beside the flames. The other men came inside as they finished their duties, five in total. As they tugged off their gloves to warm themselves, Dior stared at the brands atop their left hands, carved by knife work and ash. There were two different symbols among them, one shared by Joaquin and the cook, Jean, and an older man inexplicably called Dogshank, and a second mark borne by Tally, the cock-eyed one who tended the horses. As he ducked inside and scuffed the snow from his greasy red hair, Dior saw the one named Shay also shared that second brand. Two different marks, two different masters.
Who's the slip, fresh meat?
Tally asked, glancing Dior's way.
Some girl we found in the Nightstone.
Joaquin spoke softly, eyes downturned. He was younger and obviously new among this ragged band, lowest in their pecking order.
She was with the one that the mistress hunted, the Black Lion. They came to Avilane together a month or so back. Capitaine Aaron knew them, I think.
Tally sniffed.
What's she dressed like a boy for? We could undress her.
Shay grinned with dirty teeth.
Find out. Mistress said she's not to be touched.
Jean growled, looking up from the fire.
Aye, keep it in your britches, Shay.
Dogshank spat.
Let's mistress tear it off.
The redhead gave a bark of cruel laughter, sharing a dark glance with Tally. But he said no more. Eventually, Joaquin brought over a bowl full of thin soup, removing Dior's gag long enough to let her eat. He offered a sip of those foul-smelling spirits from his flask, but she grimaced and refused. Joaquin was gentle in feeding her, but careful, too, retying her gag tight and checking her manacles before returning to his grubby comrades. Outside in the raging storm, deep beneath frozen earth, Kiara and Cain Divok slept the day away. Legs curled beneath her, Dior began inching her fingers toward the lockpicks in her boot, eyes closed as if she slept, blue lips moving swift all the while. She was frightened enough to pray now, you see. They were wary, the five thralls. One ever sat watch, waking a comrade after a few hours to take turn on guard by the flames. But all the while, the Grail was at it, drawing the leather wallet from her boot and setting to work with her picks. She'd surely sweet-talked a thousand locks in her time, but none that her life truly depended on. Sweat filmed her brow now, her fingers trembled, but near dusk, the manacles gave way and her hands were free.
Dew opened her eyes a sliver. The one named Dogshank was a watch, but he was nodding by the dying fire. All was silent now, save for the storm roaring outside the hovel and the snores rumbling within.
She brought her hands out from behind her back, setting to work on her ankle irons, and after 20 tortured minutes, her legs were also loose. Stretching and wincing, she dragged that wretched gag out of her mouth. Slipping off her boots, she rose soundless as shadows, creeping on stocking-clad feet. As she lifted a backpack and water skin, the floorboards creaked beneath her, and she froze still as stone. But the only one who stirred was Elena, the snowhound opening her eyes and wagging a hopeful tail.
Dior pressed finger to lips, and the lancer raised one ear. And swift as winter wind, the holy grail of Saint Michon slipped out the door.
Dragging on her boots, she climbed onto the wolf mother's sousia. The pony startled from sleep, nickering in annoyance. But with hands wrapped tight in the gelding's mane, the girl gave a swift kick, and he was running, hooves thundering on fresh snow. A cry of alarm rang out, but she was already gone, galloping through the rising dusk. She'd not have had any clue where she was headed, of course, only that she must away, charging downwind where the untamed might not smell her, and praying like a saint.
She was city-born and bred, this girl, no true rider, clinging with nails and teeth and sheer bloody will to the sousia's back. But she was gutter-sharp, too, a child of broken locks and filched purses, and lies too many to count. Galloping into a stretch of corpsewood, she kicked her horse harder, harder, and steeling herself, she leapt from the gelding's back into the arms of an old, twisted oak. The breath left her lungs as she and the tree collided, spit and frost and flecks of blood. But Old Man Oak caught her true, and she clung like grim death as her stolen sousia charged onward through the trees, tracks carved clear in his wake. Gritting her teeth, she leapt into the twisted crown of another tree nearby. Then she jumped again, again, threading across the wood until she was a goodly length from the gelding's tracks. And slipping down into the snow, the grail began running, stumbling, wheezing, stopping only to catch her breath and listen for pursuit. It came soon enough, the drumbeat of approaching hooves. Whispering prayers to God, Mother Maid, and all seven martyrs, she cut away from the gelding's path, weaving into the tangle of dead trees. Her eyes were wide, heart thundering, water skin thumping her flank as she ran. But she smiled as she heard hooves rush up at her back and fade again, following the horse, not her. Grinning like a thief, she ran through the mist and twist, whispering soft, "Bonsoir, maggots." She was free.